People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, I wonder if you've been to see the Barber of Seville, Cape Town Opera presenting Rossini's masterpiece, The Barber of Seville, at the Theatre on the Bay, Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay, directed by Sylvain Strike. It opened on the 5th of August, and it's running to the 17th of August. It's described as a vibrant new production directed by Sylvain and with a multi-award-winning cast. And heading the cast is William Berger, who is my guest today. He sings the role of Figaro. William is a Fleur de Cup Theatre Award winner, and he's a former member of the Drakensberg Boys Choir, which takes you back a bit, and the Royal Academy of Music in London, winning many singing prizes, including here the Eunice Samro Dion van der Walt Bursary and Lucerne Festival Prize at the Ernst Heffliger competition in Switzerland. And he's carved out really an international career, which has taken him from the Royal Opera House in London to the Kennedy Center in Washington, from the Concerthaus in Berlin to the Liceu Barcelona. His voice is described as a warm timbre. He has a generous stage presence. If you were at our gala, you will have seen him singing the Toreador song. William Berger, welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you very much, Rodney.
It was years ago that we spoke, when you were out here to do Carmen, in fact, and we're going to hear you sing the Toreador song later. But here you are with the Barber of Seville. And first of all, I just want to say you just opened, and I hope it's gone well, and I believe the booking is very good.
Yes.
Has it been fun? Because it's very different, isn't it? It's called a bonsai production of a Rossini opera because it's in the smaller theatre, the Theatre on the Bay.
Correct, correct. This is a new terminology and a new concept under Marcelin Menard. And I think it's fantastic because, I mean, you really couldn't get more intimate opera than Theatre on the Bay unless you did it on the carpet in your front living room, maybe. And which is also part of what it makes it both terrifying, because I'm not used to seeing every single person in the audience face when I'm singing
an
opera.
Because normally the spotlight is on you and the audience is further away.
Exactly. And there's about 1,200 of them or something in Artscape. Yeah. So that's new. But it's also such a gift when you're playing comedy, like in this production, to be able to communicate so, so directly and so intimately with an audience. So, yes, I don't know if we're allowed to give away the secrets of radio, Rodney, but we are recording this the morning after my opening night.
That's right, that's
and
right.
And so I'm sitting here with a mixture of just severe tiredness and utter elation. But it went very well and we had a really good show.
Well, you're looking good, Nick, and you made it. So there
Thank
you are.
You.
But you're not in every production, aren't you? There are two casts. We must get that right.
I'm not in every performance, correct.
Yeah.
There are two casts because we're playing every night. And this music is so taxing vocally that an opera singer, because to remind your audience, of course, we don't sing with any amplification. And it's just too taxing during it night after night. So we've got two fantastic, well-balanced casts. And each is fantastic as the other. And we're playing alternate nights.
What are the acoustics like for an opera in Theatre on the Bay? From a projection point of view, do you have to work harder? Or is it designed to throw the voice back into the audience?
Well, first of all, I'm probably not the best judge for that because when I sing, I can't hear anything else anyway. So I'm just focusing on sticking with the piano or the orchestra. I don't know whether you can really hold back in this. You know, it's, gosh, I nearly said something rude. It's full on kind of, you've really got to go for it and playing the comedy
absolutely.
And the energy. Yeah.
And I mean, it is undoubtedly Rossini's most popular opera and rightly so.
Undoubtedly. I mean, again, I should dress it all up as absolutely wonderful, but Rossini wrote it in 2 weeks. And when you dig down into the score, also, he never wrote the recitatives, which is the sort of speaky bits in between the arias, right?
Yes.
Somebody else wrote that. And they are, probably because they're not written by Rossini, they take a little bit of, shall we call it, extra effort. And then I think also because he wrote it so quickly, what used to happen in that time is the score would be sent to singers and they'd go, oh, you know, maestro, can this go up a little bit or down a little bit? It's a bit tricky here. I don't think there was any time for those sorts of corrections. So everything is just in the extreme, showing the voice off at its absolute peak. And so that's sort of the form you have to attain to be in for every performance.
No wonder there are two casts, as you say.
Exactly.
If you're doing it every night. William, and I was intrigued. There's piano accompaniment, mm-hmm. isn't there? And the pianist is on stage. And I heard something about, we won't give too much away, he is almost playing the part of Rossini.
He is playing the part of Rossini.
Is he actually doing
that? But beyond that, let's not give anything more away, okay. other than, because it's such an intimate space, Figaro often breaks the fourth wall, as we like to say in theater, and addresses the audience directly and does these sort of asides and knowing looks. And it's a wonderful concept, this, by Sylvain Strike. Rather than have the pianist sit to one side, looking perhaps a bit of a lemming, not tying in with what's going on stage, which is merely 2 feet away, she decided to make him appear like Rossini. And you must look out for the beautiful pair of mutton chops Jan Hijo has grown on the side of his face in order to look more like a period Rossini. I think it's fantastic.
Who is the pianist?
Jan Hijo.
Jan Hijo, that's right. A concert pianist in his own right.
Indeed, indeed. And he will tell you that playing this score is more taxing than some of the concertos he's tackled.
I'm sure it is. And of course, there's no conductor, so he presumably is playing the role of the conductor as well.
Exactly.
A la Rossini.
A la almost. Rossini.
And what sort of size is the cast? I'm trying to remember. It's not a small cast, is it?
It's not a small cast. We are 4 principals that rotate per performance, and then there are other principal roles that will play every performance. I think there's another 4 of those. And then there's a men's chorus of another 8 members. So we're at 16 now.
Yes.
So gosh. I would say it's terrible that I haven't actually counted, but it feels like a lot of people at times.
I don't expect you to. But for all that, on that relatively small stage as well.
On that relatively small stage, correct, yes.
And it's in costume. It's in full costume.
Full costume, full sets, lighting. I, of course, can't see it, but I saw some of the production photos just recently, and it looks beautiful. And it's sort of period with a hint of modern and, you know, an espadrille here, a beautiful floral print there, and a set that looks like the streets of Seville. It's darling. It's really beautiful.
You really are enjoying this, aren't you?
William, I am.
Sort of things. But now, for our first piece of music, why don't we have the Lago al Factotum, which is the famous aria that Figaro sings in The Barber, isn't it?
Correct, correct. I would, of course, say it's the most famous piece out of the whole opera.
Well, I'm sure it is. Yes. And is it? I've seen it being sung sometimes at competitions, singing competitions in Johannesburg. Mm. And sometimes it can go horribly wrong and really sound as though the singer is struggling.
Are you trying to jinx my performance right now, Ronnie? Let's not talk about performances that went wrong. Can we just stick to the ones that went really well?
Okay. Well, who's singing here? Who's going to sing for us?
I have suggested this recording by Simon Keeneyside, who I had the privilege of working with when I was a young artist in London. He was singing Billy Budd, and he is very much an idol of mine. And coincidentally, it was his birthday this week. So.
Oh, well, there you are. Happy birthday to Simon. And here he is with the Lago al Factotum from The Barber of Seville.
La 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 giorno sempre importa l'ingiusta, mille cucagni e per barbiera vita più nobile non si dà. La 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 Rasere i pettini, lanciati i forbici al mio comando, tutto qui sta. Lanci i forbici e rasere i pettini al mio comando, tutto qui sta. Per la risorsa, voi del mestiere, con la donnetta, col cavaliere, con la donnetta, tra l'allea, col cavaliere, di qualità. Tutti mi chiedono, tutti mi vogliono, donne e ragazzi, vecchie fanciulle, qua la parrucca e presto la barba, quella sanguigna, pezzo biglietto, tutti mi chiedono, tutti mi vogliono, tutti mi chiedono, tutti mi vogliono, qua la parrucca, presto la barba, presto di letto, ehi, Figaro, 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 son qua, ehi, Figaro, son qua, Figaro qua, Figaro là, Figaro qua, Figaro là, Figaro su, Figaro giù, Figaro su, Figaro giù, quanto prontissima son per il quermene, son per cose delle città, delle città, delle città, delle città, delle città. Ah, bravo Figaro, bravo bravissimo, ah, bravo Figaro, bravo bravissimo, fortunatissimo, fortunatissimo, fortunatissimo per verità. La 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 la
I have to say, it's a lovely voice. Simon Keenly side, the baritone there, singing the Lager Auf Factotum, the sort of glittering star of the show that Figaro sings in The Barber of Seville. And my guest is the man who is singing Barber of Seville, Figaro, William Berger, in the production which is on now at the Theatre on the Bay. Remember, not here at Artscape, a bonsai production at Theatre on the Bay. I was just thinking, William, do you like comedy? You seem to... I mean, we saw you in The Sound of Music in that outrageous role you did, the campest thing ever. But it made me think that you love comedy.
I mean, what's not to love about comedy?
Well, true.
Although they say tragedy is easy and comedy is hard. And it is a sort of skill, I guess, that I was gifted with. You know, for the longest time, when I was a young singer, I wanted to be taken very seriously and do all the serious things. And in fact, you know, I did Bluebeard earlier this year, which is a very heavy...
Yes, you did, the Bartok opera.
Yeah, very heavy dramatic role. But then you get older, and when you get to know who you are yourself, and then you go, oh, well, the world sees me a certain kind of way, and I'm fine with that. And people tend to like seeing me in comedies, and I'm not complaining about it, Rodney. I have a great time playing those roles.
Well, in a moment, we're going to hear you singing the Toreador song, which you did for our gala with a great flair of comedy, but we'll come back to that in a moment. You are doing such a lot, aren't you, William? Your name is appearing a lot because am I right in saying that you've decided to move back to South Africa permanently? Because you spent a long time in the UK, didn't you?
Yes, I was in the UK for 25 years. I went there to study straight after matriculating. And I mean, you say decided to move back. The universe sort of took the decision for me. It was during COVID. You know, if you remember correctly, the world was ending and the industry was ending and it was all was ending. And I wanted to come home and be with my family. And in the process, immediately there was work for me here. And the phone was ringing and I was really having a great time. And I was fortunate enough to already have a property in Cape Town. And the decision was really to sell my home in the UK last year. So I am here now full time and I'm so happy about it.
You wrote somewhere, I read somewhere about just how much you love Cape Town.
Yeah, I mean, so what also happened in the last few years is I also got divorced, or as I like to say, I successfully completed a marriage. And and now the big, big love in my life is absolutely Cape Town. I am smitten. I am smitten with being here. The city, the naturescape, the sea. I love being near the sea. And friends and colleagues. I have such fantastic friends here, mm-hmm. that I've new friends and old friends and people that I've known. You know, I get to work at Cape Town Opera with Maklian Manar and Alex Gabriel, both of whom I've known since I was a teenager. So that feels like a real privilege. I'm very happy.
But William, you're also lucky in that you're getting a lot of work here. Was Carmen the first thing that got you out here? Was that your first professional role here in Cape Town?
That's correct. That was in 2016. Yes. So I was already 36. And that was the first job that I got with Cape Town Opera. And that was the first time I came back.
But now you're not employed by Cape Town Opera, are you? You're a freelance artist.
Yes, I'm not a house soloist. I'm a freelance artist. Yeah. They use me as and when they need to.
Okay. But William, also just having said you do all these different things, you're about to do a premiere with the Cape Town Philharmonic, a piece by Grant McLachlan.
That's right.
You've done Carmina Burana.
I'm doing it in 2 weeks' time with the Symphony Choir of Cape Town.
Yes. Okay. So there are all these different styles as well that you're singing.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
Belshazzar's Feast.
I did Belshazzar's Feast with the National Youth Choir of Great Britain earlier this year here in Cape Town with the CPO. Yes, there are all these styles. And, you know, I think gone are the days where singers were, I'm just an opera singer or I'm a leader singer or I'm an oratorio singer. I think if you want to be gainfully employed, the more different and varying things you can do, the better. Yeah, and in South Africa, that is even more true than anywhere else. So in the time that I've been here, I've even been fortunate enough to be asked to do some dubbing for television from a Turkish series into Afrikaans, no less.
Okay, your Afrikaans is still good, is it?
Ja, Rodney, I can nog steeds Afrikaans praat.
Listen to that. And this is voice stuff, not singing.
Voiceover stuff, yes. I was playing some sort of bad drug dealer or something, I seem to remember. It was a lot of fun.
I'm sure it was. But now, having moved here, have you lost contacts with overseas, or do you still have worthwhile contacts overseas? For example, if you want to go and work there again or be invited out the blue.
That would, of course, be very, very nice. I have had some overseas contracts in the last few years while I've been living here. And that was always the goal, to be able to live here, work here, and then occasionally go overseas for something. But, you know, good wine, good food, great weather. I really don't want to go back to the UK.
Good friends.
Good friends.
As you said. And also, William, Cape Town Opera is really going through a bit of a up at the moment, isn't it? It's going through a good phase. It's doing extremely well.
Oh, well, that's so great to hear you say that.
But you agree. I'm sure you agree.
I mean, I am having a great time. I don't have the same perspective you do, I think, because I'm sort of in it more often. But
yes,
so that's
yes.
why it's so encouraging to hear you say that, and hopefully a lot of people say that. I think what the company is doing is fantastic. I think all arts organizations at the moment are having to do a sort of major pivot in defining where they want to be and what their role is. And, of course, because, you know, there's just less money for everything at the moment. Groceries, concert tickets, arts budgets, et cetera, et cetera. And Cape Town Opera is, of course, also very unique in that it is the only full-time opera company on the entire continent, which is extraordinary. And we have such a dearth of talent here, of vocal talent.
Many of whom have been exported and doing very well overseas.
Yes, and that is great for individuals, but it's also difficult for us as an industry because it's a bit of a sort of talent drain. You know, we are. But then hopefully it pays back in the way that I came back. People come back later in their lives with more knowledge, more experience, and it feeds into the whole system, because we really are a wonderful kind of microcosm of arts here in Cape Town in particular.
We were talking about Bizet's Carmen and the Toreador song, and you performing that back in 2016. So when we had our gala here, you were one of the performers who gave of his time free of charge to sing with the orchestra the famous Toreador song when he enters for the first time. And I just want to say before we play it, because that's going to be our next choice, your choice, by the way, is that the audience loved it because you did quite a lot of acting. You did quite a lot of fooling about, may I say, and I do mean that very positively. Do you agree?
I don't remember. I mean, I'm sort of so in the moment.
Yes.
And I mean, the aria is about something very specific. It's about bullfighting.
Yes.
And I think certainly, Rodney, you've seen me perform a few times. I cannot be accused of simply standing and singing.
No,
I mean,
this is
just too boring for anybody, including myself. So I do remember there was a moment where I decided to hold one of the long high note pauses a little longer than Maestro Geller had anticipated. And so I just sort of shot my hand up in the air and gave him a sort of side eye with a smile, and he smiled back, and then we sort of carried on. But I didn't realize how big that had read in the auditorium, and I could hear a titter sort of rippling through the Artscape Opera House. But it was a lot of fun, and I was very flattered to be asked to perform in the gala. And of course, it was a big thank you to FMR, because you play so many of my recordings frequently, and I'm very grateful for
that. Well, there we are. Here you are on stage here at Artscape with a very responsive audience, Bernard Gerler conducting the Cape Town Philharmonic in, well, the Toreador song from Carmen by Georges Bizet.
Seigneur, seigneur, car avec les soldats, il est torrido de s'entendre. Pour plaisir, ils ont les combats. Le cirque est plein ces jours de fête, le cirque est plein d'hiver tabac. Les spectateurs perdent la pègre, les spectateurs sont apostrophe, brise ta page, poussée jusque à la fureur, car c'est la fête du courage, c'est la fête des gens de cœur. Allons, à garde, allons, allons. Silence, à que se passe-t-il? Il crie sérieusement, le taureau s'élance en bondissant, auditoril. Il s'élance, il entre, il frappe, un cheval roule, entraînant un picador. Oh, bravo, taureau! Le cirque plein de sang. fide grie se tottor metterò alò a garda alò alò
Well, there you are. Just listen to that crowd, William. They loved you doing that. That was my guest, William Berger, singing the Toreador song from Bizet's Carmen at the FMR Gala Concert with the Cape Town Philharmonic, conducted by Bernhard Goehler. And I got the impression that you enjoyed it just as much as the audience. Not the sort of thing you would have done, I think, if you're doing it on stage in the role. But
you
it
never
was,
know.
Shall we say, flamboyant. You know what, William? I remember when I first met you, not knowing how to pronounce your surname, because at first I didn't know you were South African.
All right.
So I thought it was pronounced Berger or something. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, it's the fully Afrikaans, it's Berger, as in burger.
Well, I mean,
it's an E.
First of all, no shame in not knowing how to pronounce my surname, because I made that version of it up.
I see.
So I was born, and I still am, it's still that on my passport, Akaskalk Willem Berger, like all the rugby players in my family before me.
What happened to you?
Well, I mean, I kept the physique of a rugby player, but God gave me this other talent in addition. So when I moved to the UK, just for your audience, I mean, we're talking the late 90s.
Right.
And
You went straight after matric.
I went straight after matric. Right. And the Brits weren't, you know, South Africa wasn't as cool internationally then as it is now. And the bastardization of my name, Schalk, I couldn't cope with it. So the villain became William. And then I thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. Because I didn't want some critic one day going, oh, Mr. Berger, B-U-R, Mr. Berger's performance would have been more at home in a McDonald's than the stage of, you know, insert opera house here. So I thought, I'll just change it to B-E-R, which then was quite fun for a while, because then in France, when I was working there, I was, you know, Monsieur Berger.
Oh, yes.
In Germany, I was Herr Berger. Herr Berger auf der Bühne, bitte, they would call to my dressing room. And so, you know, I will answer to just about anything, but yes.
But we call you are William Berger.
Yes.
Here in Cape Town.
Yes.
Where were you born, William? Let's just trace back your sordid, not your sordid, you know what I mean.
Wow.
You were born in South Africa. You are, yeah, as you said, full and through South Africa.
I was born in a hospital in Paarl, and I grew up on a small holding in Kulinov, just outside Stellenbosch, for the first few years of my life. And then my parents, we moved to Swellendam, where I started primary school. And by old standard grade five, I joined the Drakensberg Boys Choir in KZN.
Had you already realized you loved singing and had a voice, even though you were so young?
I realized I loved music. I mean, there's also a story where, as a small boy, I desperately wanted to do ballet. And my father said over my dead body, you know, so ballet's loss is opera's gain, maybe. No, I don't think I had any chance as a ballet dancer. And my mum said, how does this sound, a school where you do music all day? I said, that sounds like heaven. Mm-hmm. And so I went and loved it. Back in those days, before cell phones, you were allowed one phone call a week on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon for 10 minutes with your parents, but not for the first month while you were at the school. you could write a letter, but they would redact things as well. It's like the army, you know, in the
yes,
old days.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, so the first phone call arrived some point in February of 1990, and I was just bawling my eyes out. And for one of the only two times in my life when my parents gave me an out, they said, if we've made a mistake, we will come get you now, all the way from Cape Town to the Drakensberg. And I said, through tears, I said, no, I'm having too much fun. So,
they
I mean,
thought, what?
That is sort of the story of my life. You know, things get tough at times, but the fun is always there. And that's what keeps you going. So, yes, I was in the Drakensberg Boys Choir. And then I matriculated from St. Andrews in Bloemfontein, because by then my parents were living in the Free State. And then I went abroad.
But when did the singing start? I mean, obviously it started in the Drakensberg, but when did you realize I could, in fact, be a professional singer?
So I joined the school in 1990, and the very next year, 1991, was the Mozart bicentennial celebration, 200 years since his death.
1791, since the death, that's right.
And so the State Theatre in Pretoria were producing Magic Flute for the celebration, and they needed three boys for the parts of the three boys, and they came to the Drakensberg. They auditioned a bunch of us, and I was one of the three chosen, along with Clint von der Linde, who's another professional singer.
Yes, that's right, and has made a huge name as a countertenor.
And we are still friends to this day, and we sort of have very much a brotherly bond because of that experience. And that's when I realized you could do this for a living.
Mm.
And I was 11 years old.
Yes, because you would have been a boy soprano.
I was an alto. I was never a soprano. I thought, well, you know, if you can do this, if people will pay you for singing and farting around on stage with costumes on, count me in.
Right.
And really, that was as simple as the decision was, and is either testament to my determination or sheer pigheadedness that I pursued it to this very day. That's what I do.
But then how did you get overseas? Because it must have been tricky with a South African passport, and you had already decided to make singing your career. Mm. So obviously you went overseas to study.
Yes, so I won that bursary. It was in a competition, the Dion van der Walt Unisa Samro. It's quite a mouthful, that.
It is.
Won that bursary. And that allowed me basically the plane ticket to go over. I mean, really, there was sort of no money. A British conductor called Dr. Roy Wales, who's the conductor of the English Concert Singers, had toured South Africa in my matric year in 1997. And they were in Bloemfontein. Two of the chorus members stayed with the school chaplain and his wife, the organist. And she had a VHS tape of me doing all sorts of things, singing, playing the piano, conducting, which is another thing I pursued at the time, and sort of gave it to him. He put it in his briefcase, didn't think anything more of it, went back to the UK, watched it, and then wrote back and said, we think we can help this kid, this, you know, ginger-haired boy who wants to do these crazy things. And so I first went to East Sussex, to Lewes, to a sixth form, sort of a matric music academy for 6 months. But the moment I landed, they immediately organized auditions for me with the major music colleges in London. So I auditioned at the Royal College, the Royal Academy, and Trinity College of Music. And I eventually went to the Royal Academy.
Gosh, William. Mm. Well, we're going to talk about your international career in a moment. But to start that, I thought, here's an aria from Handel Samson, sung by my guest, William. And this was recorded with Nicholas McGeegan in Europe.
Correct. We were on a long tour with this piece, and this was recorded live in the Frauenkirche in Dresden, which was bombed terribly and then reconstructed. The piece is terribly, not the aria, the whole oratorio is terribly long. And the character I was singing sings at the beginning of the second act and the end of the second act. So because the tour had been dragging on, and the church pews in the Frauenkirche are quite tall, and so the soloists can sit at the front quite concealed from the audience, I did a thing that I had never done in my career before and never done since. I decided to take a book on stage with me. And I was reading...
Naughty, naughty.
I was... Indeed, I was reading Barbara Bailey's memoirs. And, you know, of course, I didn't know what was coming. So the character I'm playing in Samson is Manoah, his father. And that night in the book, I got to the bit where she lost her son in a horrific motorbike accident on the eve of his 21st birthday. And I was sitting in the church in the middle of a concert, knowing Barbara, bawling my eyes out. And then I had to get up and sing this aria called How Willing My Paternal Love. So for better or worse, it's been captured for all posterity, and that's what we're listening to next.
Music by Handel from Samson, that was called How Willing My Paternal Love. My guest, William Berger, was singing there, and the orchestra conducted by Nicholas McGeegan, and that was recorded in Germany. I'm talking to William Berger for, among other things, the fact that he's playing Figaro in the production, Cape Town Opera's production of The Barber of Seville at Theatre on the Bay, which has just opened, in fact, and runs through for another couple of weeks. But I want to talk a bit about your experiences in the UK, because you really have had, in the beginning I said from Covent Garden to the Met, oh, and all those things, but you have been, well, lucky. Obviously, there's an element of talent.
Luck has a big part to play, a huge part, I think. For any performer, you know, it's the breaks that you get. The bit where luck sort of taps out is when you are given those opportunities that you've got to be able to step up and do the work and be ready and be prepared.
Yes.
But yeah.
And you've worked with amazing conductors. You've worked with conductors that we are household names here on the international scene, as well as with singers. You said with Simon and Keenly side. You must tell me about some highlights that you recall. And because you sent me a list of all you've done. The Telemann Festival in Germany, Shostakovich Operetta of all things, a role debut in Handel, a host of things, and performed with orchestras all over the world.
Yes, I mean, I'm not very good at talking about highlights because then it sounds like bragging, and you've mentioned some lovely things there, so thank you very much. I mean, I'm happy to share the odd funny story here and there. I mean, you mentioned the Shostakovich operetta.
Yes.
So it's the only operetta he ever wrote, and I did that with the Opera of Fribourg in Switzerland, and then we took it to Paris, and we sang it in Russian, but we did the dialogue in French.
Oh my goodness.
Now, I challenge you to find two languages further related from each other than those two.
I can't imagine, yes.
And then I have to say, there's nothing more terrifying than doing French dialogue to the French in Paris. It was one of the few times in my life when I was incredibly, incredibly nervous. Because the French are unforgiving about that stuff. And they love to correct you, and they'll just laugh out loud if it's not the right thing. But yeah, that was definitely something I remember. Another one I remember was performing at a theater, San Carlos, in Lisbon. I was doing Gluck's Iphigenie en Tauride, and I was playing the role of Oreste. And it's a typical Greek plot, brother and sister, island. They don't recognize each other. She's a priestess. He's been looking for her. At the end, she decides to sacrifice him. And at the last minute, she recognizes him as her brother. You know, standard stuff, standard operatic stuff. And so I was doing these performances in Lisbon. And the last performance was a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. Now, if you want to find another nation that's as sort of African in their timekeeping, it's the Portuguese, especially on a Sunday afternoon, because you have to have time for good food and wine before you come to the theater. So the show started 20 minutes late, and I was catching a plane that evening to Sydney from Lisbon.
Oh, my goodness.
And
not round the corner.
No. And so, and of course, there's this sacrificial scene at the end, and I'm absolutely covered in stage blood. It's everywhere. And because we had started 20 minutes late, I had no time to shower after the performance. I got to grab a few wet wipes and sort of wipe what I could, put on my own clothes. But I didn't quite notice, like, how bad it would appear. And I had a driver waiting for me at stage door, and I sort of came out with two suitcases, and I still sort of had all the stage blood caked in the back of my hair, and this man's eyes just grew bigger, and then I realized what he was seeing. So that's how I made my way to the airport, and through check-in, and through security, and then I quickly had a shower in the lounge before I got on the plane.
That's a lovely story. But these are the things, I suppose, that you've built up over the years, all these wonderful experiences. And one of the things I wanted to ask you now is, or ask singers this, because it's me being indulgent. You have notably a very big voice, but would you consider any more dramatic roles? I mean, would you do, for example, a Rigoletto or a Wagner opera?
I mean, Rigoletto is a dream role. It's really on very much top of the list. I think the next, in terms of composers, the next steps would be into Verdi and into Wagner. So in terms of Wagner, starting with Wotan.
And you're starting at the top.
Yeah, but I mean, oh, Du mein Hold and Abendstern.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
That beautiful lyric aria. And I think that's quite safe. I mean, another singer, an older singer that I admire is Hermann Prey. I was actually listening to his recording of the Barbara Seville a lot in preparation, and he then later sang that role too. But yes, the Verdis, the Rigoletto, Macbeth, maybe a Falstaff. I don't know.
Right. Well, the sky is the limit, isn't it? And you're having such a good time. We're going to take another piece of music now. And this is interesting because it's a duet from The Marriage of Figaro, which basically almost is the same story, isn't it? To say the idea of the barber.
So to get geeky for a second,
yes,
Beaumarchais wrote a triptych of plays around the story of Figaro, and Mozart set the middle one to music, The Marriage of Figaro. So even though Mozart comes before Rossini, Rossini then set the first play the Barber of Seville, where it sets up the story. Figaro is a successful barber and factotum. He meets the Count, they had met before, and he helps him seduce Rosina. Rosina then becomes the Countess in the marriage of Figaro. And it's quite interesting for the character of Figaro because he was this independent man with his own business and his own wealth, a bit of a hustler, and he gives all of that up to become the Count's man servant and work in the service of his home. And so that's how the two stories link with each other.
Well, do you know that I didn't know that? I didn't realize that there were three plays. And as you say, the Barber of Seville is in fact the first. Then comes the marriage with mm-hmm. that story. And the third one hasn't really been set.
The third one at least exists in a version by the American composer John Corigliano, and it's called The Ghosts of Versailles.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I've heard of that. Okay, so this is a duet then with Susanna.
Correct.
The Count and Susanna. Okay, let's have a listen.
Crudel, perché finora farmi languir così? Perché, crudel, farmi languir così?
Signor, la donna giovane può di dir di sì.
Non che in giardin ve mai.
Se piace a voi, però,
duet from Mozart's opera, The Marriage of Figaro, sung by our Figaro in the Barber of Seville, William Berger. And who was the soprano?
That was Carolyn Sampson, but of course in Cape Town, I sang it with the incomparable Brittany Smith.
Yes, isn't she lovely?
She's wonderful.
Everyone is mad about her. And I
including
think,
me, yes, including me.
Lots of people are mad about you, William, with this Barber of Seville thing. But as we reach the end of the program now, okay, so the Barber of Seville is running until the 17th of August.
Correct.
At the Theatre on the Bay, Cape Town Opera's production. William Berger is singing the role of Figaro, as you've discovered. And we've covered a lot of your international career as well, let alone your local career. And we'll be seeing a lot of you in Cape Town over the next few months, including singing a premiere by Grant McLachlan, which made you choose a very special carol by Grant.
Yes, so, I mean, to talk about Grant's piece first, it's called The Silence of the Day. And it's incredibly special to me to be asked to do this piece because, you know, for years living abroad, I was singing songs to poetry by Heine and Rückert and English poets and French poets. And so for me to have the opportunity to connect with some really homegrown material by these South African poets, Archie Swanson and Xolisa Nyezwa and Stephen Watson, that Grant has chosen. And of course, Grant's own music, which is so melodious and beautiful. The harmonies are just beautiful and it's so evocative and atmospheric. And to sing about things that really touch on my own life. So one of the songs is called Langebaan, which is a place where half of my family is from, the Weskus. We used to go on holiday there a lot as a child, and I still have family in Veldrift and Saldanha. But also singing about things like Bontebok. I've never had to sing the word Bontebok in a song. And of course, the Bontebok National Park is by Swellendam, where I grew up. So there are all these very personal links. And then in addition to that, I got to meet Grant, and initially I didn't put two and two together, so I didn't realize how incredibly famous he is, because he's so lovely, and we got on really well. And only later I realized that Come Colors Rise is this incredibly famous carol that he wrote. And I don't know, I've never asked Grant about it, because I'm too embarrassed to say that I didn't realize. Maybe he's sick of hearing it, but I would be incredibly flattered if I wrote something that had taken, you know, its place in the popular lexicon of Christmas music. And all those years living overseas in a cold, wet Christmas, and mostly in the UK, it doesn't even snow at Christmas, this song always made me cry, this carol, because it's so wonderfully evocative of home and Christmas at home.
What a lovely introduction to the end of your interview, William. Thank you very much for being such an enthusiastic guest as well.
Thank you.
And I hope to speak to you again, maybe when you do Votan in Der Ring des Nibelungen or something, or Rigoletto.
From your lips to God's ears, let's
hope. Absolutely. William, all the best, and I hope you have a fantastic run.
Thank you, Rodney.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. FMR.